Hey guys, welcome to episode 173 of a Wrestling Gal podcast, providing you with the female perspective on all things wrestling. Join me, your host and wrestling enthusiast, Ella J, as today I am joined by the Queen of the Ring, Alex, to bring you another edition of a Wrestling Gal Focus, this time on the Heartbreak Kid, Mr. WrestleMania, the Showstopper, Shawn Michaels. Now let's chat! Hello, everybody. Today, I am joined by the co-host of the Church of Joshi and a co-host of WWE's The Ultimate Show, the Queen of the Ring, Alex. You have a lot of titles, Alex. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. I do have a lot of titles.
It just keeps piling on.
You're doing absolutely fantastic things, though. So before we really get into today's episode, how are you doing with everything? You are putting your hand into a lot of things right now and doing amazing things and flourishing. So honestly, how are you doing with everything?
I'm still here. I'm still floating. It's tough. I'm not going to lie. I'll be transparent. It's tough, but it's fun. It's, you know, something I really dove into during the beginning of the pandemic. Yeah. And everything I never thought I would dream of doing, I have done. And it's so wild, but I'm having a lot of fun. And I like you said earlier, I'm just piling on names. Like Shawn Michaels, he has a whole bunch of names. Mr. WrestleMania, the Showstopper. I'm just trying to be like my hero.
Oh, okay. I can see the correlation. So Alex is inferring to basically the theme of today's episode, which is another special edition of A Wrestling Gal entitled A Wrestling Gal Focus on the one and only the Heartbreak Kid, the boy toy, the Showstopper, Mr. WrestleMania. Like Alex said, a lot of nicknames, the greatest of all time, in our opinions anyway, Shawn Michaels. So... Oh my gosh. Like I love that you honestly, I feel like are the biggest like Shawn Michaels fan. And so everything about Shawn Michaels, I just think of you. And so I guess, first of all, we're obviously going to go through his legacy, his impact, his greatness, but also kind of our own personal like memories and like fascination with him. So I guess we'll just start at the beginning as we'll kind of go back and forth as like a conversation discussion. So what are your first memories with Shawn Michaels, Alex?
So my first memories of Shawn Michaels is my introduction to wrestling.
Really? Okay.
And yeah. So WrestleMania 12, I was a tiny little girl, and I have two older brothers, and my older brother was super into Bret Hart. And during that time, I was like, well, I got to go against my brother. Like, who's his opponent? Let's see. And he comes out and he's ziplining down. And I've never seen anything like that in person, like always watching cartoons, like you see extravagant things, but to see something like that, that was live action, just blew my mind. And he ziplined down to my heart. I always love saying that, but it's true. That was WrestleMania 12 was my very first memory of Shawn Michaels. And it was the night that he won the championship in the Iron Man match. So it was just meant to be.
Oh my gosh. Like honestly, literally zipped a line to your heart. I honestly wish my introduction to Shawn Michaels was something that like cool that you can kind of play off of to this day. But I really didn't get into wrestling until 2009. So literally Shawn Michaels' last leg. And so my first memory of him, I was watching Friday Night SmackDown. It was when they would sometimes go over to SmackDown for like the holiday segments, you know, around Christmas and stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like Rey Mysterio sometimes against like Straight Edge Society at the time. And so my first introduction to Shawn Michaels was like the late DX era. And I was actually really fortunate enough to catch Shawn at a house show, my very first house show, which was his last house show here in Buffalo right before, because he retired like 6 months later. And so I was really fortunate to see him for the first and really last time.
Oh, yeah. My God. I am so jealous of you because I live in New York. I've never seen him wrestle live. Never.
Oh, my God. I've only seen him wrestle live once. And then 2019 when NXT invaded SmackDown, I got to see him when he came out and like slapped hands, but he wasn't wrestling. So I only have gotten to see him once. And it was him and Kofi against Legacy at the time. And so I still have my DX glow sticks to this day from that event. As sad as that is, but honestly, just like, I obviously we came in two different eras. Like you came in more so around like mid 90s, I would assume. Yeah. I can't even do math right now. I started basically around WrestleMania 26. And so okay. I came 14 years late to the game, unfortunately. But wow. See, it's just, it's crazy to see like people get integrated with him at like different eras because he has had so many eras. But what about you, Shawn Michaels, about Shawn Michaels in that moment for you, WrestleMania 12, what really drew you to him or captivated you to him?
His gear. Mm-hmm. It was his gear for me. And since that day on with wrestling, I've always watched wrestling as theater and art mm-hmm. more than sports. And that's how I've always treated wrestling because of him, because like it wasn't even a match. It was just him ziplining down with his gear. And it was WrestleMania gear too. It was the iconic gold and white that now every wrestler that's up for a huge title always like repeats that, you know? And it's yeah. almost tradition. Like he almost started that tradition. And even like, he's one of maybe the first wrestlers that had like a huge WrestleMania entrance like that. And he like, it's almost like he kicked it off. But his in-ring style was so different during that time, because during that time, you know, it was like big old muscles, big old meat slapping each other, which I'm all for, but you know, he was very small compared to them. And I think, you know, in the mainstream eyes of WWE, he was one of the first superstars at that time yeah. to like, you know, conquer that stereotype. Like you don't have to be this huge dude. Like you could be this tiny dude. And he was a high flyer. I mean, not so much like the likes of like, you know, Eddie Guerrero or Rey Mysterio, but he was still so agile in the ring. And he was just pulling off moves that was just, we barely even saw in the main title scene. So that's definitely what captivated me, especially during that match. And I know a lot of people give that match some slack because it's an Iron Man match, it's too long, but it's still a pretty good technical match.
One of my favorite Shawn Michaels matches is a really long one too at Bad Blood 04 with him and Triple H. That one was like an hour long too. Like,
oh yeah.
20 minutes to an hour. So, I mean, it just goes to like, obviously we were drawn in initially for like the theater aspect, but just talking about Shawn Michaels, like in-ring ability for a moment, like honestly, he is obviously one of the most resilient superstars. Like I would always choose him in like the video games
yeah.
and everything because his score, I forget what it's called. I haven't played in a long time, but his score was always really, really high, like above 90. And so he was always versatile in the ring and resilient, always kicking out. Honestly, there were some moments where you're like, how the hell did he kick out of that? And then somehow yeah. he's able to come back and do a kip up into like a super kick. And he does all of these things. Like you said, he did some high flying stuff. He was very fast, but he was also resilient and had great psychology in the ring too. He was very versatile. And my first, it really captivated me. What drew me initially was kind of like yours. It really wasn't so much the wrestling component, because again, I was young. I really didn't understand like wrestling, kayfabe, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so it was, again, I came in during the late DX era. So he was always with Triple H. It was really the comedy aspect or like the performance art of it. And so that really just gave me an escape, honestly, like seeing him and Triple H be absolute goofballs with like John Cena and like it was during that whole Hornswoggle thing, you know, and then like Little People's Court. It was really like a comedic like humor escape for me, like the performance aspect of it. I really didn't appreciate his like in-ring work until like later on after he retired, I feel like.
Did you go back and watch it and you were like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Because at first I just thought he was just this really funny guy. And I'm like, he's making me laugh every single week. But then, yeah, as you grow up, you learn to go back and watch stuff as you kind of understand more, you know, because I was 11 when I found wrestling. I was like, I don't know what this is. I just think it's funny. And so obviously, yeah, I went back and like some of the feuds he had, like with Chris Jericho, that was a great feud. His work with Triple H from after he returned from his first retirement was amazing. His first DX era was amazing. His Rockers era was amazing. And so I feel like we've all gone back and appreciate, obviously you've grown up with most of it, but yeah. I've gotten to go back and really appreciate a lot of his like favorite matches and moments.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that. I love when people discover wrestling late. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you have no idea. And you like introduce them to the whole like encyclopedia of what they want to know. And they just get so excited. So I'm so happy to hear that you did discover him late. And like, it's arguably that his later years are probably his best years because he was pulling out, I mean, WrestleMania 25.
Yeah.
Like, against Undertaker is just the WrestleMania match. So it's really cool to hear when people have discovered him later in that time. And it was like, oh yeah, I like him that time. It's like, oh no, but you need to watch the 90s stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, I really only got to see his last, like DX had won the Unified Tag Team Championships. They dropped them. Then Shawn, you know, didn't win the Royal Rumble. So he's putting his career on the line mm-hmm. against the Undertaker. And then I remember the headline the next day said, Undertaker 18 and woe for HBK. I will never forget that headline on WWE.com the following morning. That was a really somber time. But yeah, I've really gotten to go back and appreciate a lot of like his old moments. So we'll kind of get into that. I guess overall, just broad spectrum wise, though, before we really get into his eras, what are some of your personal favorite moments or matches of Shawn Michaels? Obviously, WrestleMania 12 holds a special place in your heart, but mm-hmm. otherwise, what are some of your favorite moments or matches of his?
My favorite Shawn Michaels match of all time is SummerSlam 2002, and it's the street fight with him and Triple H. Mm-hmm. And I watched it live, and it blew my mind. There was so much blood also, so it like also scared me.
Yeah.
A little bit. But I remember, I'm going to sound old. I used to go on LimeWire and I would download that match every single day. And I watched it almost every single day. And it was just something about that match with him like coming back and he just still had it. Like he just still connected with the crowd. He was still 100% in the ring. And ring rust is, you know, it's real, but it seemed like it was nothing to him. Like he didn't know the meaning of ring rust. Like he still like didn't miss a beat during that match. And I think that match is special because, you know, he came back with Triple H. Like, so he came back with somebody that he really trusted. And the story going into that match as well, with him coming back, kind of reuniting DX, but he gets jumped in the parking lot and they discover it's Triple H. And oh man, it's just such good stuff. It's just good stuff. And it kicked off like that feud with him and with Triple H, the Survivor Series, and like you were saying earlier with Bad Blood. And there's just something about that match that it's just magic to me. When I watch that match with Shawn Michaels, it's just pure magic.
They like Shawn Michaels and Triple H really are wrestling soulmates because their work together is obviously phenomenal. Like it's why I got into wrestling, but their work against each other was also something like that shouldn't be forgotten, because like you said, Shawn Michaels had just coming back from retirement from a severe back injury. So he had been out of in-ring action for 4 years, at least on WWE television. And he's coming back with somebody that he trusts and that is safe in the ring and everything. And that really launched a great, like kind of 2-year feud to where eventually they kind of obviously made amends and reformed DX later in 2005, 2006. And so it's just really like long-term storytelling of like the ups and downs of like not only wrestling partners, but kind of life in general. Like people have ups and downs in life. And so it was really cool to kind of see them at their top and then incorporate it into a real life storyline with Shawn coming back from retirement. And then, you know, at the time, Triple H had kind of built his own empire, his own DX army and his own WWE championship reign. And then Shawn mm-hmm. comes back and Triple H is kind of feeling like he's finally been casted out of Shawn Michaels' shadow. Mm. And then it kind of launches their feud with each other. And so that was like the Ruthless Aggression era was really something special for those two.
Yeah. And I think with that feud, Triple H helped Shawn Michaels come back as well. Because, yeah. Well, to be frank, like he didn't need any help.
No.
But in the terms of him coming back after, you know, being difficult to work with backstage, I think that, and because that's the thing also, I'm sure we'll get into it later with the biography series, like a lot of people said, and even Shawn says it himself, where it's just like, I was so awful backstage, but yeah. everyone wanted to work with me in the ring because he knew how to turn it on, at least professionally in the ring. So I think, you know, with that feud with Triple H, it helped Shawn come back fully as like, you know, I'm here, I'm serious, like I'm going to be on my best behavior this time. And he pulled off some of his best matches during that time.
Oh, especially too. Yeah. So, I mean, let's just kind of talk about this biography for a while, because you mentioned it. Like, I know you've watched it. You've discussed it on your Twitch channel. I got around to it, I think, like a week or two ago. And mm-hmm. honestly, just blown away. Like I obviously didn't know everything because I didn't grow up with a lot of it. So hearing a lot of the stories, like you said, like during some dark times where Shawn wasn't the best backstage. In fact, him and Marty Jannetty got fired on their first day in WWE and then came back basically a year later after they had kind of cleaned their acts up a little bit and kind of launched the Rockers. And so obviously you grew up a little bit after the Rockers era. So watching that documentary back, what was kind of your main takeaways from like the Rockers Marty Jannetty era before, you know, that barbershop window super kick betrayal?
I really liked watching this, like the very early stuff before they made it to WWE, mm-hmm. because that was some footage I've never seen before.
Yeah.
So I really liked watching that and learning more about his true beginnings with Marty outside of before WWE. And then going into WWE, like, of course I knew everything.
Yeah.
I knew everything, like when they won the titles and it was a mistake and they didn't win it and they took mm-hmm. it away from them. That was heartbreaking. And of course the fights. But the whole biography the whole thing was very cool to watch. But for me, I knew everything. Because I read his book. He has a book, Heartbreak and Triumph.
Yeah.
And I read the book. I've watched the documentary that WWE came out with a few years ago on DVD. So like everything they were talking about back in the day was things that I knew. One thing that was shocking to hear was Triple H talking about carrying Shawn Michaels to the hotel and putting pillows around him so he wouldn't, you know, fall on his back and like choke on himself
suffocate,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was interesting to hear. I've never really heard him talk so candid about that. And Shawn Michaels has always been open about that. He's very, you know, I have, you know, made amends with the past and the person that I was back in the day. But it was interesting to hear Triple H talk about it. And it was interesting to hear Triple H even say he had to set alarms every 2 hours and go check on Shawn to see if he was fine. And during this time, he was like the champion. Mm-hmm. He was the guy of the company. So it was wild to hear that. And really, the really cool footage was him working with the NXT people. That footage where he is in the conference room with, I believe it's Undisputed Era, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, and they're going over their match. I thought that was fascinating. I would have loved to see more footage with that and him just working with the younger talent.
It's crazy to think that if it honestly weren't for Triple H, like what would have happened as Shawn's, you know, like mental and like addiction was really spiraling. It's like we don't know what would happen. So it again, like you said, they really highlighted, I think, a really important thing. Like sometimes we don't get to see that behind the curtain. Like obviously we knew they were kind of wrestling soulmates and really great friends before they kind of had that fallout and, you know, Shawn took that retirement leave. But it's crazy to think like what would have happened if Shawn Michaels wasn't, or if Triple H wasn't there for Shawn, like where would we be today, you know? And so that was really a moment. Again, I was emotional throughout most of it, but it was really cool to see like the progression and like you said, candid discussion and candid like storytelling that they took in this, because there was some things that we didn't see and didn't know. And so I think it was just a really great portrayal and great candid documentary/biography of Shawn, because you got to hear a lot of it through his own words too, and obviously through Triple H. And it's cool to see how far he's come from like this cocky, arrogant, egotistical guy to now he, like you said, he's an NXT producer and writer. And so it's cool to see him like interacting with the younger talent and taking all his experience and wisdom and instilling it and helping out and aiding the talent of the future.
Yeah. And overall with this biography, I was, when they first announced the series, I was so excited that they were going to have an episode about Shawn Michaels, because I feel like in terms of mainstream credit, I feel like he should be bigger, because there's so many people that I have met in the past talking about wrestling, and they're like, oh yeah, well, who is that one guy? He was like the sexy boy. Like it was like, that's Shawn Michaels. It's Shawn Michaels. Everyone should know about Shawn Michaels. So I was really excited that they were highlighting him against the likes, with the likes of like a Stone Cold Steve Austin and Macho Man, because I, maybe this is a biased opinion, but he's like on that level, you know, and he has influenced so many wrestlers we love today. So I'm so happy he got to have that spotlight.
Do you know what's crazy too? So about 10 years ago, WWE did like a list of like the 50 greatest superstars of all time. And I remember vividly. So like you would, when people think wrestling, a lot of the time, obviously they think like Ric Flair, The Rock, Stone Cold, and like Hulk Hogan, whatever. And so in this list, and Undertaker, I would say too. In this list, though, Shawn Michaels was number one. And this list apparently was voted on by the superstars and by the fans as well, and like WWE, whatever. But in the thing, Shawn Michaels was number one, and like Hogan was like 16 or something. And I remember them kind of like throwing a little like shade as like, and like Shawn Michaels shouldn't be number one, and they're saying with like some stiff competition, blah blah blah, like the people's pick was Shawn Michaels as the greatest of all time. They kind of made it seem like he shouldn't be. And so that's where I agree with what you're saying, is he kind of sometimes gets overshadowed, and I honestly don't understand why. Like on that list, I believe it was Shawn was number one and Taker was number two, and then like Rock and Stone Cold were obviously in the top 10, but it seemed like a little bit at a jab at him, because yeah, like he's not the biggest guy, and and you know, but like I just don't understand. I really, it boggles my mind, because obviously to us he's the greatest of all time, and so I agree with what the people were saying, but I feel like mainstream wise he's obviously not the most mainstream guy. And so I think that's where they were like, yeah, like how is he kind of number one? It seemed like they were being a little bit like discrediting him. Honestly,
I think it's because of his size, and that's a lot of like, it's, I understand people wouldn't gravitate towards Shawn being number one. But if you think about, again, his influence, like I don't think we would have Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, who else? Daniel Bryan, even. Like we wouldn't have these smaller amazing talent, yeah, like going for it, you know, because he was the first one. Was he the first one in wrestling? No, because there were smaller dudes and doing New Japan in like the early 90s, yeah, you know. Of course he wasn't the first one, but he was the first one in a mainstream eyes in such a huge company like WWE, you know, whereas like WCW at the time, like they had, you know, their cruiserweight division, but that was like so mid-card and they were 5-minute matches. While meanwhile, Shawn Michaels is pretty much kind of doing the same mm-hmm. thing, maybe not as good, but he's doing it during main events mm-hmm. and he's doing moves that we've never seen before. And it's that, you know, it's the complex of the smaller dudes can make it to the main scene. Mm-hmm. Like he started that whole trope, you know, and I feel like that's why maybe some people don't give him enough credit, because he wasn't physically the biggest superstar, yeah, you know, but he had the charisma, he had the mic skills, he had the in-ring skills, he had the look, like he had it, he had the full package. And I don't know, it's sad to see that people like discredit him, but I feel like now, again, with the help of the biography, I yeah. feel like now people are respecting him a little bit more, which makes me very happy.
Me too, because yeah, he wasn't the biggest guy and he wasn't the most mainstream name, but honestly, a lot of the ratings and like wrestling performances and crowd reactions was like because of Shawn Michaels. Like, obviously you have your entertaining moments and like your high, you know, gimmick spots, whatever. But if we're talking like wrestling and in-ring performance, like how could you not be impressed by Shawn Michaels? Like you said, he influenced so many people today, and perhaps we wouldn't be maybe getting some super kick parties today. And that
exactly. whole,
like you said, even gear inspiration, whether it's like the Broken Hearts or the Zebra Print, which we've seen Candice LeRae do it. We've seen Ziggler do it. We've seen, uh-huh. I think Seth Rollins even once did like a Shawn Michaels homage, you know?
Yeah, he came out with the all white. Yeah. Yeah. And even in Takeover in Brooklyn, Bailey was wearing white and gold.
Yeah.
So it's like his influence is so universal.
I know. So, yeah, it's just, I think, like you said, I think after this documentary, people are more like, yeah, Shawn Michaels is the fucking GOAT. Like, you know, or at least deserves yeah. more recognition, because like, I just don't, again, we're just so biased, but like he honestly obviously he's our favorite of all time, but he obviously should always be in discussion. I feel like he's been overlooked like so many times by more of the mainstream in air quotes people, you know, and that's mm-hmm. not to take away anything from those people as well, but I feel like at least in the past Shawn has kind of gotten a little bit lost in the shuffle, which like is crazy to me.
Yeah.
I was like, what, you know?
But anyway, now that we got that out of our yeah, systems.
Yeah. Rant. But anyways, talking in the whole scope, obviously, I'll just briefly go through the eras that were kind of demonstrated in not only in the documentary, but Shawn Michaels as a whole. So obviously he came in, he had his early days prior to WWE. In fact, he got fired on his first day with Marty Jannetty, which I think is a whole story of itself. So, but in WWF/WWE, we obviously had the Rockers with Marty Jannetty, which came to an end in 1992 in that infamous barbershop window superkick. And then he moved more towards the boy toy / heartbreak kid with the Intercontinental Championship with Sensational Sherry. And then mid-90s, we kind of moved to his really WWE Championship era and with the Click and with HBK and Diesel. So we kind of have to talk about the Click here for a bit, because that moment, obviously, in the ring is the infamous, you know, Madison Square Garden incident with the Click and everything. What are your thoughts?
Curtain call, yeah.
Yeah, the curtain call. What are your thoughts on this era of Shawn Michaels with the Click and all of that?
It's it's a wild moment yeah. in this industry.
Yeah.
Because they broke the door down with yeah. kayfabe, and it's wild at that time, because this is way before the internet.
Yeah.
This is way before, like, if this would happen, let's say around like 2000, 2001, it would have been fine, because the internet was coming out and, like, you know, I feel like more kayfabe was dying out during that time a little bit, right? But when the curtain call happened, it was like, what, 95, 96 or something? Yeah. And like, this is way before that like time. So it's so mind blowing. And even for someone to sneak in a video camera into Madison Square Garden and record that moment, it makes me wonder how many other moments like that were missed that fans got to see.
Somebody maybe like probably a little has footage, but that's never been seen.
Yeah. And even like, again, footage like that to circulate, to like circle around before the internet. Like, that's what blows my mind more about that whole situation. And even like, I remember having MySpace. Jeez, I'm dating myself. I remember like having MySpace and like reading his book and having like a discussion with friends about this time, like during MySpace era at that. And this is like early like chipmunk videos on YouTube. Yeah. And it's even talking about that during that era is crazy. So to think now during this era where it's just like The Undertaker's posting pictures of him fishing, like it's on Instagram. Like, it's wild to think that this, like now that like little tiny like seed of the curtain call has like blossomed and vined around into now where it's just like kayfabe is dead, but not really. And there's so many, I don't know. It's just it's a wild moment in time. It still blows my mind. How they were like, we're just going to go out and say goodbye to our friends and they're going to work with different companies. But again, so many things like snowballed out of that. Like, again, kayfabe was dead. But then also we would never gotten Stone Cold Steve Austin with King of the Ring.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't. Diesel was gone. Scott Hall was gone. Sean was champion. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't punish him. So the only one to punish for that during that time was Triple H, Hunter, and he was supposed to win the King of the Ring, and they're like, nope, you're not going to get it. We're just going to give it to this one guy. He used to be the ringmaster. I don't know if you know him, but we're going to go with him. And then that happened. So it's wild to think that such a tiny gesture of respect that they just wanted to give each other in the ring was an atomic bomb of magic in a way in this industry.
And again,
that's how I like to think about it.
Yeah. And again, too, if Triple H was King of the Ring, would we have really ever gotten DX the following year in 1997 with China? Mm-hmm. So, like, in a way, like, it somehow worked out, at least, you know, obviously not in that moment. And again, like you said, would Stone Cold Steve Austin be a household name today? And like, would DX really have formed the following year if it had not been for that moment? But let's talk about DX for a moment. 1997, DX is all about this crude and lewd and like suck it attitude with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and China. Oh my gosh, watching this back, you got to see it play out live, correct?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. So during that time while you were growing up, was that something like your family approved of, or was that something they were like, oh, no.
I think it's funny. I was talking about this kind of a little bit with my friend yesterday. He was watching the Mick Foley biography with his mom, and there was the Hell in a Cell moment. And his mom was like, you were watching that? Is that even allowed? And my mom did the same thing when we watched it back with DX. And like, she was like, I let you guys watch that? And it's like, I don't know where your parenting skills were, but like, you let us watch it, which is, you know, I grew up fine. It's all right. But during that time, watching that, that was very special to me because of the introduction with China and the fact that my favorite wrestler of all time kind of introduced me to China. China was someone that when I grew up with China, I like saw myself in her because she was like this woman with the other boys, you know, and she just like matched up with the other men on that roster, and she was beating them up, and I just like related to her so much. And that DX era is, that is by far the best era. Like, PG era was all right. The other, the reformation and the with Road Dogg and X-Pac, like, that's good. But that pure beginning, like, even with, it was China, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Rick Rude. Mm-hmm. Oh man, that was some good stuff. But yeah, it was more like DX for me. I think more about China than Shawn Michaels and Triple H, even though they've carried the legacy on. But that, those early years with China, like seeing her grow into this industry and her legacy grow into this industry with the help of that era of DX. Like, I remember watching, what is it? In Your House, Bad Blood, 1997. It was the first Hell in a Cell match. And Rick Rude was also with them at this time too. And I remember, like, the end of that match, the way that China helped carry out Shawn, it was something about it that just sparked in my head of like, wow, she's so tough. She's so cool. And she would carry Shawn's titles too. Yeah. She's like holding the European title. I'm like, she's so cool, because we've never like seen a woman like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we've seen managers, we've seen like women like hold the title like that, but to the fact that she could like be as buff and as tall as Triple H and like, oh god, it's, I totally like switched up, like, oh, this is a China episode now, but but to me, like, that early day, the early days of that, like, 97 DX is all about China in my eyes. That's
interesting again, though, because again, it just goes to, along to the line. If like things didn't play out how they did again, like,
yes,
we have seen Stone Cold King of the Ring, would we have seen DX form? Would we have seen kind of this rise of China? And so you grew up in that era. And again, I didn't get to experience it live, but watching it back, some of my favorite moments were from that era, like the playing the poker table,
the poker
in the middle of matches, you know, everything suck it. That was, I feel like we didn't really get to see their full potential, because obviously Shawn went into that feud with Bret Hart and then Stone Cold, and then he broke his neck. So I feel like we didn't get to see everything they were really capable of. But and then so talking about this DX reformation, obviously, like, Triple H brought about like X-Pac, Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, and all of them. But after Shawn Michaels returned and after his feud with Triple H during the Ruthless Aggression era, we kind of saw this reformation or revival of DX in like 2005 and 2006. That's the era that I really, really appreciate. Like, I don't own many wrestling DVDs, but I have a whole DVD of the 2006 like DX like year.
Yeah.
So that one again, like, maybe it's just because I really appreciate like the comedy and all of that. But that era, that year with like the Spirit Squad, Jonathan Coachman, Vince McMahon, I would argue they were even like cruder. And that era, because it was like right before, a couple of years before they went PG, I would argue that year was when they really went full force with like their attitude, because, you know, they were out here imitating Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon, which is still honestly my favorite like wrestling moment of all time.
that is the funniest moment of all time, and like the gags that they would do and the bits that they would do, like the Vince loves cock thing, and like and the production truck. Oh my god, the production truck. That's right. And even like the Spirit Squad with the flying poop and stuff. It was gold. Actually, fun fact, the first live event I ever attended was a Monday Night Raw. And it was Madison Square Garden, and it was a September 11th. And I only remember that because Lillian Garcia sang the national anthem.
Yeah.
And I was so excited because I thought I was going to finally see Shawn Michaels wrestled live. Uh-huh. And it was during the Vince McMahon feud with DX. So he was with Triple H.
Yeah.
And Triple H had a match with Vince McMahon. That was the main event. Mm-hmm. And they jumped Shawn Michaels.
Oh no, Alex. Oh no.
It's so heartbreaking. fucking, they jumped Shawn Michaels before the match, and they jumped Triple H as well.
Oh my God.
And so Vince and Shane are already in the ring. Triple H is hobbling down, about to have this match. And I believe this was the go home show before Unforgiven, because this Monday Night Raw was Trish Stratus's last Monday Night Raw.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Triple H is hobbling down, he's getting beaten up, blah, blah, blah. And then Shawn runs out and I like scream. I'm super excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to see him do the Sweet Chin Music at least. And they didn't, and they beat him up. And that's how they ended Raw, with Shawn Michaels and Triple H on the ground. And that is the only time like I had the opportunity to watch him wrestle, and he just got beat up. And I went home crying. I remember going home crying. And mind you, I'm like a freshman in high school. Yeah. But I like, yeah, I cried. And it was a sad day.
I can kind of relate, because like that goes along with my other favorite, like Mickie James. Like, of course, I've seen her at shows and stuff, but I've never gotten to see her wrestle live, and I still don't know if I ever will. And so I'm still salty about it. So I understand that frustration. You know, you just want to see your favorite, like it's one thing to watch them on TV and like be entertained, but it's a whole different thing to like see them in person really doing their thing. Yeah. So I can understand.
Well, at least maybe you'll possibly see her wrestle in NWA now. See.
Yeah.
Hopefully. See, you have a chance.
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay. Fair enough. Touche. Fair enough. But yeah. Oh my God. Like that year, like, I don't know. It just was really, again, like an escape. Like wrestling really became an escape for me. And again, I was really introduced to Shawn through DX and like their whole comedy bits, and like especially like going through a dark time at that time, and then going back and watching it, like I really think that like DX is my favorite tag team, really, because I resonated with them initially, but then going back and watching like their entertainment value and performance stuff, like you said, they like that Shane and the imitation of Shane and Vince is honestly still my favorite segment of all time. And I will rewatch it all the time on YouTube. And then like the production truck where they took over Vince's microphone, kept lowering it and making it high pitch. And then they wrote "I love cock" on the TV. And then obviously like the poop flying everywhere with the Spirit Squad, Jonathan Coachman. They stuffed Jonathan Coachman, I believe, in a garbage can one time. I think Shawn, they chased him outside. Oh man. It's just like, it's good times. It's really good to appreciate like the simple like comedy stuff. It's not sometimes all about the in-ring stuff. And so obviously, like we said, Shawn is really versatile. And so that I will always have like a deep appreciation for that run. Oh my God.
That's a good run.
And then obviously after this kind of run, we saw him have like various championship runs with like our championship opportunities with like Cena, Orton, that underrated feud with Chris Jericho where Rebecca got slapped. That is like one of, you know, that's a very underrated feud, honestly.
Poor Rebecca. Oh my God.
You took it like a champ, though.
I mean, yes, like bad bitch for taking it, but like, oh my God, poor Rebecca. I cried. I remember crying. But yeah, I think his underrated feud is with John Cena. I feel like not a lot of, cause like, I feel like a lot of people, obviously Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker and Triple H, like those are top three, like his best feuds. But I really do think like during that time, him putting over John Cena was a really good feud. And like, it also carried on with DX, and there was that Survivor Series.
It's, oh my God, Shawn Michaels, ding ding, Shawn Michaels super kicks Triple H.
That is the greatest moment ever. And we got that iconic gif of John Cena where he's like baffled. That's where that gif came from. It was the Sweet Chin Music. See, Shawn is so influential, even with the internet. Even with the internet. That moment. That like bell rings, they're staring down at each other, and like like I don't know, it was like something about Sean, like he was so stiff, and then wow, like he just like delivered it. Of course Triple H sold it, like sold it, like the true champ that he is. But then John Cena's face, and that's how he kicked off that match. And like I remember the crowd's reaction to that, like, and this was like deep in that in this era of DX too, and it was like, can they coexist kind of thing. So yeah. Oh man, that's some magical stuff right there.
I'm literally envisioning it right now. Sean super kicking Triple H, and then Triple H like falling and then falling out of the ring, like through, and then John Cena's just in that other corner, like holding onto the ropes, and he's like shook. He's like looking around. He's like,
that's some, that's
and
some
and then the
stuff.
Next night on Raw, it would have been that backstage thing where Sean is just like, Triple H just staring at Sean like all glaring, and Sean just like awkwardly averting his gaze. It was a good time. And again, like you said, that was really
I forgot about that Monday Night Raw. Oh, I gotta go back and watch that.
Man, that I watched, like, again, I watch all like that stuff too. And again, like you said, that was really in the midst of their final like DX run. Obviously they had like the run with Legacy, and then they became the Unified Tag Team Champions, and then they lost them, and then Sean lost the Royal Rumble. So then he went into this final feud with the Undertaker in a career versus streak match. And like I said, waking up to 18 and woe for HBK still makes me sad to this day. But let's talk about this final run. Like this, like you said, Sean obviously had the match with Undertaker the year prior at WrestleMania 25. And then they had the match of the year again at WrestleMania 26 against the Undertaker, where Sean ultimately lost and his career was done, or so we thought, till 2018, but we won't talk about that. So this final conclusion of Sean's career, like, what is your like really thoughts or reaction looking back to his final run with the Undertaker?
It's the perfect like Cinderella story to a closer. I like to think that that feud started at the Royal Rumble the year that the Undertaker won, because they were the last seven. Two.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Because they were the last two in that Royal Rumble, and they eliminated, I believe it was Edge and Randy Orton, and they eliminated them, and they're laying down in the ring, and Michael Cole, like probably his best work calling that match. And Shawn Michaels did the kip up. Undertaker did his dead man like rising up, and that the final two for that Royal Rumble went on for so long. And I feel like the fire in Shawn Michaels during that feud started at that Royal Rumble, and then it carried on to WrestleMania 25. Hands down, the best match. I feel like that is the one match that everyone agrees they have seen more than once, maybe even twice. And again, that's some of his best work. And even like, these are two, at this time of WrestleMania 25 and 26, these are two veterans. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were like pulling out this match is like, where was this in the 90s? Like, what's going on? Not that it was bad in the 90s, but it's just like, damn, y'all still got it. So that WrestleMania 25, I definitely did not see Shawn winning. It was a really good match, though. I have some like things, like I wish the storyline going into 26, I wish the match was 25, because I think 25 is better than 26.
A lot of people, I've heard that. A lot of people think that.
Yeah. But WrestleMania 26 was good. I mean, it was the best, probably the best match on the card. And he retired and he lost. I really thought he was going to win. I really thought he was going to win. I didn't think he was going to give it up. And especially pulling out that match the year, like the previous year, I didn't think he was going to hang it up, because he still could go. He retired. And then the next night, Monday Night Raw, gave his retirement speech.
I was bawling, bawling that day. Oh, like, same. I don't cry. Actually, no, I would say there's been a few moments I've cried in wrestling, but really the most emotional were Sean and Edge's like retirement speeches. And then like Sean and Triple H at the end. Like, oh my God.
Oh, sobbing. Like sobbing. Oh God. If I was at that event, I would have a sign that said, like, I lost my smile the day that Shawn Michaels retired. Oh, like, I would be so, oh my gosh. Like, you know those girls during the heartbreak, like kid era, like the boys era,
yeah.
The girls with like the glasses. Yeah. I would have shown up. Front row, like where the green shirt guy sits, mm-hmm. like I would be right there with my gear, with my sign, if I was able to go to that Monday Night Raw. But God, it was so sad, and like it was so special to hear that he thanked Bret Hart mm-hmm. too. Like, you wouldn't even imagine that he would have thanked Bret Hart, but he did. Even like the production team, of course, Triple H, and like you said, like. At the end, Triple H coming out, sneaking up behind him, and then like Shawn Michaels like gives him a big old kiss on the cheek. Like, yeah, that's your wrestling husband. That's your wrestling husband. Yeah, it was a sad, sad day in my heart.
I just think about to the ending of the WrestleMania 26 match where Shawn is kind of at the feet of the Undertaker and like slowly crawling up him, and then buys him one last time and does the signature rest in peace, you know, across the neck to Undertaker as one last sign of defiance, as they say, and then gets, you know, tombstoned by the Undertaker. But I just really think it goes to the whole scope of like his whole career has really been like one hard fought fight. He like we said earlier, he fought so hard to break like the stereotypes or the traditional wrestler is like this big beefy guy. He was one of the smaller, more agile guys, and so I really think that ending, though, I still wish he would have won, but I think that ending moment, though, to his final match, we're gonna pretend the 2018 match doesn't exist. his final match in WWE, I think that was really the perfect closing moment, though.
Yeah, I agree, especially with, you know, him being the smaller guy and conquering that throughout his career. But even after coming back and conquering like the backstage politics of just being the troubled superstar, and even with someone like Undertaker, where he's been very candid to say, like, I did not like Shawn back in the day. Mm-hmm. I did not like him at all. There's a story where WrestleMania 14, that match, Stone Cold versus Shawn Michaels, Undertaker was at Gorilla to make sure that Shawn did the job and put Steve over. And because they were scared that he was probably going to pull off like a Montreal screw job on Steve. And it was like people like the Undertaker to have the Undertaker to be like, yes, I'll have your last match with you, and to pull off such an extraordinary match 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And also for the Undertaker, like it goes to show that like Shawn put in the work to find forgiveness and to cure like his reputation, at least with the boys backstage, if not in the ring, but at least with the boys. And for the Undertaker, you know, to win that match at 26 and to immediately dip and be like, you know what, I'm going to give Shawn the ring. This is his time. And even during his retirement speech, Undertaker coming out and showing that respect, like in my eyes, I took that as like, I finally like am showing you respect throughout your entire career. Like, I'm blessing you almost of like, you were a pain in the ass to work with, but God damn it, you were good in the ring.
Yeah. That sign of respect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We kind of really got to see the evolution of Shawn Michaels. Again, we didn't get to see everything backstage as it really played out because, you know, kayfabe was alive at least until like mid-90s maybe. But it's crazy how far he's come, and to kind of hear his story not only in the biography on A&E but the WWE's version, and then his you know, his own book. It's incredible to, like, we just started at like one pinpoint in his career, but to become so captivated by him and like just professional wrestling as a whole, he is like forever one of the greatest. I mean, we can both agree, greatest of all time. Yep. And like his career is just something I don't think can ever be replicated again. Like, honestly, like one of the most unique and like one in a million figures in wrestling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh. I love him so much. I love him
Me
so much.
Me too. Oh, man. So I guess to close things out as a whole, honestly, I feel like we already know the answer, but where do you truly think that he ranks on the all-time list of the greatest professional wrestlers?
On my own personal list, he is number one, yeah. Obviously. But I think all-time greatest, like, he is undoubtedly top three, yeah, in terms of like just his overall influence. Again, it was universal. Like, he was just the quintessential, like, if you want to be a wrestler, if you want to be at least a wrestler that's not all muscle, this is the blueprint. Mm-hmm. You know, again, like we were talking earlier, like, we wouldn't have the likes of Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, mm-hmm, like Daniel Bryan, maybe even like Sami Zayn. Like, we just wouldn't have these wrestlers if it wasn't for Sean. I can understand if he's not the greatest number one in everybody's, yeah, list, but he at least needs to make top three, top five, because like, he's undoubtedly the greatest wrestler. There are so many great matches that involve him. There's so many great moments, and there's so many, again, doors that were opened, again, like with the curtain call. Like, if it wasn't for that, mm-hmm, we wouldn't have gotten all these other things. Like, if it wasn't for Montreal Screwjob, like, he's been a part of so many, yes, controversial things in, yeah, wrestling, but it's still like paved the way for other things. If it wasn't for Montreal Screwjob, we wouldn't have had the Attitude Era, mm-hmm, you know? Like, there's so many things that just align with Shawn. So yeah, overall, his legacy is undoubtedly extraordinary.
And the fact that this doesn't happen a lot, but the fact that he retired in 2010, was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011, really doesn't happen like 1 year after people retire or leave the business. I think that's one of the rare instances. And again, I will never forget the video package of Chances by Five for Fighting. I, like, every time I hear that song, I think of Sean's Hall of Fame speech, and it makes me emotional. But that, again, it's really just a testament to his whole career, where, well, now obviously he's a two-time Hall of Famer, but, you know, it really doesn't happen a lot where he was inducted the literal next year. You know,
yeah, because everyone, like, it's just like, oh, you're not wrestling anymore. Yeah, no, you're going straight to the Hall, yeah, of Fame. Like, mm-hmm, you are purely meant for the Hall of Fame, to main event the Hall of Fame, and go straight to that. And he never wrestled ever again. He never wrestled ever again. That was it. Never again.
Now, if for some reason in our minds, if Shawn Michaels were to return to professional wrestling today, let's just say he's still, you know, mm-hmm, in his prime, and we're gonna pretend that one match it didn't happen.
What match?
If he were to return today, who are some dream opponents you would love for Shawn Michaels?
The obvious one is AJ Styles.
Yeah,
I would definitely love him versus AJ Styles. But I have like eras.
Okay.
Because I feel like Shawn, 2000 Shawn didn't wrestle the same as 90s Shawn. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, if I want AJ Styles versus Shawn, I want, like, early 2000s Shawn Michaels versus AJ Styles.
Okay.
I've also said Shawn versus Kenny Omega. Ooh. But I would love Heartbreak Kid era, mm-hmm, Shawn Michaels versus, like, cleaner era, mm-hmm, Kenny Omega. Obviously, like, I, this is also another one, Eddie Guerrero versus Shawn Michaels. Oof, I would have loved to see that. Also, another good one would be Aleister Black versus Shawn, or Tommy Enden now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two that completely different, like, personas, I think. Mm-hmm. Again, like, Shawn's worked with a wide array of characters. So I think that could be fun, too.
Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun.
You know what I feel like is a really underrated one, and I think a lot of people say he emulates Shawn Michaels, is obviously, like, Dolph Ziggler. But I really think that they are two of the best, like, sellers of all time. And I know, like, Ziggler said his dream opponent is, like, 1997 Shawn Michaels. So, like, Attitude Era Shawn Michaels. but I really think that obviously they have both the super kick and have like similar styles, but I really wish we could have seen more. And I'm not talking about like Spirit Squad Dolph. I'm talking like today, like yeah. the last 5 years that we have seen, like Ziggler established himself as one of the best like sellers and most resilient people again, much like Sean. And obviously Ziggler hasn't ascended to the stardom that Sean has, but I think that really could have been a really special moment. And I wish that if Sean were to have one comeback match instead of that other one that won't be mentioned.
Which one? I don't know what you're talking about.
I really wish it could have been against somebody like a Ziggler or maybe even like an Adam Cole. I think that would have been so good.
Yeah. Yeah. That it. Sean should have came back and put somebody over. Honestly, him versus Adam Cole would have been amazing too, because they're very similar.
Yeah.
Another one that's really weird that I thought of the other day when like you sent me this was Shawn Michaels versus Charlotte Flair.
Oh my God.
For the story, purely for the story of like him retiring Ric Flair and like, I just want to see it. Like, if we're going to do an intergender, at least with Sean, I want to see him versus Charlotte. But Charlotte, now that she's been training with Andrade and she's got like the Spanish fly under her arsenal and stuff. Yeah.
They could both be doing like top rope stuff. Again, we're talking about like not Shawn Michaels today. Like what year Shawn Michaels, what era Shawn Michaels would you love to pin against Charlotte Flair then?
Ooh. I think I would do it right after the retirement, because I think it would be cool to see like that era of Shawn versus this era of Charlotte right after the Flair retirement and just have some like some feud of like, I don't know how you would do it. I don't even know how you would do it. I just, because I think I watched the retirement match recently. Yeah. I was like, wouldn't that be so cool if it was like Charlotte Flair versus Shawn Michaels? But also, I think one era that would work out the best was when he was when it was his championship era, like around WrestleMania 12. Like that would have been good. Maybe like she would have gone for the gold or something.
Yeah.
Both
of their kind of really cocky phases.
There we go.
Okay. I like that.
Thank you.
Now, to wrap things up, where can people find you on all your social medias, Alex?
Okay, so on Twitter, I'm at Queen of the Ring with two G's, and I'm on Instagram at _ Queen of the Ring because somebody else took the screen name. And you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Queen of the Ring. I stream Fridays and Mondays. We do tier lists on Fridays. We rank different wrestling stuff like stipulation matches and pay-per-views. And on Mondays, we watch Tough Enough. We've been going through that. And you can find me on youtube.com/Queen of the Ring Wrestling and watch some of my YouTube videos and my old vlogs when wrestling weekends used to be a thing. And and yeah, that's where you can find me. Am I forgetting anything? Yeah,
okay, you can find her too on Church of Joshi and WWE's The Ultimate Show.
Yes, that's right. All those wonderful things. Yes, Church of Joshi every Sunday, 12 p.m. twitch.tv/Kaylavision. You could follow us Instagram and Twitter at Church of Joshi. We just cover Joshi wrestling and we go through different eras, like Bull Nakano era and now like Mayu Iwatani era. So we've been doing that. That's been great every Sunday. So if you've ever wanted to get into Joshi wrestling, please come follow us. And yeah, I'm also on a little tiny show called The Ultimate and we book WrestleMania matches. And recently we did Backlash and you can find me on the Peacock with Michael Scott from The Office, I guess. So
making moves, Alex, making moves.
Still blows my mind.
You deserve everything though. And again, this has been a real pleasure. And like I said, there was nobody else that I even considered in kind of commemorating and focusing in on the career, the legacy, and just everything Shawn Michaels. So thank you so much for joining me today on a special episode of A Wrestling Gal Focus. It's been a real pleasure, Alex.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor. It's an honor to cover Shawn Michaels with you. Thank you so much for having me.
The iconic, the legend, the greatest of all time. So that's all that matters.
Exactly.